We have a good mystery to put on your reading list for today. I enjoyed it, and I bet you will, too. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on Wisconsin Public Radio. And with me by phone, Betsy Drain and Michael Hinden, back once again. They're here to talk about the latest addition to their Nora Barnes and Tony Sandler mystery series. The latest is called The Bones of Bascom Hall. Three other books in the series, one, The Dead of Achill Island, another, Murder in Lascaux, and the other, The Body in Bodega Bay. Both Betsy and Michael are Professor Emeriti of English at UW-Madison, and it's great to have them back with us. And have you ever thought of writing a mystery? Tell us why you love the Nora Barnes and Toby Sandler series. I hope you'll join in with your comments and questions. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Betsy Drain, welcome.
Hello, Larry. Thank you so much for having us back. You've become part of the ritual of producing a book, because for every one of these mysteries, you've had a conversation with us. And this is actually the very fifth one. There's one more. So it's very exciting to be putting it out.
Well, it's great to have you, Betsy. And Michael, thank you again for joining in.
It's great to be with you again, Larry.
For those who aren't familiar with your books, maybe you can talk about those two main characters, Nora and Toby.
Well, I could start with that. Nora Barnes is a woman with a career in California. She's an art historian, and she works at a small college there. In this book, she has come away from her college to do a course at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, which is a wonderful thing for us to be able to bring the series here. She's married to Toby Sandler, and he has an art and antiques business on the north coast of above San Francisco. He manages to get involved in the mystery that she manages to get involved in, most of which involves some kind of art.
You know, I'm wondering, how much do you feel that Nora and Toby are like the two of you?
Well,
they're glorified versions of us. What would you say, Michael?
Yes, they're much younger and more attractive and able to do things that we can't do anymore based on age. So it's fun to live through them in our imagination.
You know, I just wanted to bring this up. I'm a kind of an old movie buff. I like watching the old movies, and the Thin Man movies with William Powell and Myrna Loy. They played a married team and solved mysteries. And the interplay, I don't know if you took anything from those movies, but the interplay from those movies always reminded, I was always reminded of that interplay, which I enjoyed very much in your coming forward in your book. So I wondered if they had any played any role in your thinking when you were developing the series.
As a matter of fact, they did, and by calling our protagonist Nora, we have really paid an homage to those Thin Man novels and movies, because we love them too.
Yeah, they're great movies. Well, you've written books that take place in places like Ireland and France. Why'd you choose to come home, in a sense, with this novel?
Yeah, You know, I really think that coming home is exactly the phrase we spent, like other young people, you know, we ourselves went around the world looking for wonderful other places than Madison, taking for granted the terrific, wonderful things of Madison. And now, later in our lives, I think we realize that Madison is a world of wonders in itself. And as worthy of homage as the Riviera or Ireland or Italy or whatever. So we felt a sort of call to come home and also to express our love of Madison, our real affection for the many different parts and aspects of Madison, including its history.
Yeah, and a lot of its history comes to the fore in your book. And, you know, and as an alum and a professor here myself, I took it was really interesting for me to kind of review a lot of the history, because the history that you're talking about has to do back with probably the 70s or late 60s, the war protest times. Maybe you could give a sort of, not a synopsis, I don't want to give too much away. One of the things that happens is we get emails after the shows are over when we talk with authors and say, you gave away too much. Could you give us a little synopsis of what's going on in this book?
Talking about, you know, so the history that you remember, and I don't know exactly when you came to Madison, but Michael came to Madison in 1969 and served 1 year of teaching as an assistant professor, and he was teaching in the summer school in 1970 in late August on the day that the bombing happened of Sterling Hall. So history, the historical event that's most important the book back to is the bombing of Sterling Hall, which was, of course, one of the major events towards the end of the Vietnam War protest era, where four young men from Madison, decided to bomb the Army Math Research Center in the center of campus, right near Bascom Hall, in the building that also housed the physics building. And that bombing really rocked the nation, because it killed an innocent man, a physics researcher, and badly hurt three other people. Was just one of the largest, I think it was the largest so-called terrorist bombing up until current times in the history of the United States. It was just a huge impact on both the buildings and the people of Madison. Madison was shaken up. So our story occurs in the present, pretty much, actually, about 5 years ago, when there was on campus here, in fact, there was on campus a conference that was designed to bring together people who lived in Madison or who were students in Madison in the 60s. And it was called, they called it a party with a purpose. It was a reunion in order to contemplate what was happening. This was run by Ben Sidran and Judy Sidran at the Memorial Union. So that conference brought hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of former students to campus to think about what happened 50 years before that. So we set our novel at that time. Nora's coming to do her course. Toby's coming to take a course on Frank Lloyd Wright at the same time in the summer. And a number of students, but especially two couples, come together, and two of them take Nora's, the two women take Nora's course. The two men are in the course with Toby, and they think about their past. They think about the other demonstrations, like the Dow demonstration, but particularly the bombing of Sterling Hall. And what brings it all together to be a mystery is that there are skeleton bones that get erupted into a room of basketball, and they may be the bones of one of the bombers who also was one of the friends of this group. So the mystery sort of splashes out in the first page of the book. The bones splash out, and then the question is, who do these bones belong to? Do they belong to the long missing bomber? And in fact, in reality, there is a long missing bomber. The other three bombers were found and imprisoned. Each one served a sentence, but there is one who escaped and really the shame of the FBI, which always claims to get its guy, but they have not been able to find the name of that that actual person was Leo Burt, and he is still missing. We create a character called Theo Kern based on him, and he's the one. I wonder if you know, I was told that you might want me to read the first paragraph of the book, and maybe that will be go along with what I've been talking about and give readers an idea of how we set that up. Would that be good right now?
Yeah, I actually would be, and I really enjoyed that first paragraph, and I thought, well, and it takes place, we're in Bascom Hall on the campus, of course, in one of the, in its big lecture room.
Right. Okay, let me start with that. So this is page one. It started with a whoop. 1 minute, the speaker was nearing the climax of his remarks. The next, he was holding on to the lectern with white knuckles as a deluge of water slammed down from above, raining debris and almost sweeping him off the stage. He fell to one knee, then rolled over the edge and came to rest like a mendicant at the feet of the VIPs who were seated in the first row. Toby and I were seated near the back where the visitors, staff, and latecomers clustered. All during the speech, there had been hoots and catcalls from disgruntled faculty in rows ahead of us. University police lined the lecture hall, but no one had anticipated a finale like this. So much water. It continued to splash over the lip of the stage as people started for the exit, glancing up apprehensively. And then what transpires in the next few paragraphs is that what comes down with the water are first a rib bone, then an arm, and, you know, an accumulation of bones.
I thought it was a great way to start the book. Betsy Drain and Michael Hinden, our guests today, co-authors of the Nora Barnes and Toby Sandler mystery series, this one titled The Bones of Bascom Hall. You can join in. Maybe you've got a question or a comment about what we've been talking about, or maybe a comment on their books. Love to hear from you. The number's 800-642-1234, or you could email us, email address talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Great to have you along today on WPR News. Just a look ahead tomorrow on Garden Talk. Laura Jull will be back to talk about woody ornamentals and vines. And then Melinda Meyer stops by to tell us more about bulbs. So that's tomorrow. Right now, we're visiting with the authors of The Bones of Bascom Hall, Betsy Drains and Michael Hinden. We've had some problems with Michael's phone, so we're going to continue here with Betsy to finish out the program. And again, join in 800-642-1234, email to talk@WPR.org. And got an email from Bill in Green Lake, And he wonders, do the writers know about the real bones buried at Bascom Hall? If not, he says to give him a call. So for what you know, are there bones buried at Bascom Hall, Betsy?
Well, let's see. I don't remember that. Michael, do you remember being told by someone about some bones at Bascom Hall?
I remember reading about some human remains buried under Bascom Hill, but not in the building itself.
Uh-huh. Yeah, on the hill.
Yeah. Okay, so
that's all we know. We may need to make that phone call.
Well, Bascom Hall, of course, is one of the most well-known buildings on campus. It sits at the top of the hill at the end of State Street, and of course, Abraham Lincoln, that statue is right out in front. Iconic setting. Bascom Hall had a dome, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, and that was an inspiration. Actually, one of the inspirations for the book was Michael was reading a kind of a picture book about the history of the university, and it had a big spread about how a cistern was created as a fire tower, sort of protection. To put it itself in there, and it told also about the fact that there used to be a dome, but that the dome build was fired up and burnt in 1916. But it was a lucky thing that they had put a cistern underneath, in the attic. Because when the dome began to fall down, the timbers were burning, they fell into the cistern and were extinguished. And then eventually the cistern, I think, sprung a bit of a leak, and that also helped to put out the fire. So the dome disappeared. But Michael then had the idea that, what if Frank Lloyd Wright had decided to put a new dome on? And that created a whole new aspect of the mystery that several of the characters, including Toby, could start looking for the plans that were never used. Michael?
And that's how the Frank Lloyd Wright subplot came into the story. But when we heard about this dramatic event, and especially learned that this huge cistern was still in the attic of Bascom Hall, which it is, we said to ourselves, that's a good place to hide a body. and that's really how the novel began.
It's a fascinating novel, and then to bring those the other characters, the two women who are taking the class with Nora, and the two guys who are taking the other class on Wright with Toby, made for a really fun story, and I did like the other characters as well. I especially like Diane, who was the campus police detective that the two characters kind of worked with throughout the book. Where did she come from?
Well, I guess I'm a lucky person in that I fell into the opportunity to know Sue Riesling, who was chief of police for quite a while through golf, that she became a member of my golf group and got to know her. Now, Diane Young is, who is the name of the character, is nothing like Sue Riesling, except in being extremely confident and a kind of The thing, some of the qualities that I really love in Sue Riesling are a woman of very high principles and, you know, just strong ethics, who nonetheless doesn't exude any kind of self-approval at all. She's a very outgoing, warm, and accepting person, but a person of very strong principles. And I thought it would be fun to have someone, but she's also an extremely fun person. And I would say Diane Young is not as funny as my wonderful friend Sue Riesling is, but she has a kind of a light touch. I wanted to have somebody who could make fun of herself and have as a light touch.
Well, and as a golfer, I enjoyed the fact that you worked the golf in.
It was fun to depict Glenway as it was before.
Yes, yeah.
in the year of the book, it hadn't yet done its renovation, so it's a picture of how it used to be to golf Glenway.
Yeah, and it served to move the plot along, that conversation while you're golfing. It's a nice. I thought it was a nice element. What elements must be present in a good mystery novel, by the way?
Well, that's a good question.
That's a great question. But plausibility, you can't get the reader to believe something that's too far away from reality. And especially if you're describing a real campus and a real city. So plausibility would be one element. Suspense would be another. And a satisfactory resolution at the end would be a third. Just off the top of my head, those elements seem to be present in all of the best mysteries. Wouldn't you say so, Beth?
Yes. And then, of course, we like to have interesting characters. And I was thinking, you know, what you might ask, and you might ask who influences us, et cetera. I always think Agatha Christie is the absolute model of the great plot. And her characters are not very well developed. They are kind of very general types. So it is possible to have a mystery without having characters who are deeply engaging or psychologically rich. But I think that the taste of the modern reader is that we want that. We want the detective to have an interesting, and in this case, you got two of them, that the detective to have an interesting character or character conflicts, and you want the main characters also to have intriguing elements, you know, that interact with the plot.
Yeah. John,
I was going to say, Larry, if you can also introduce a little humor while everything else is going on, it usually helps things move.
Well, yeah. It does indeed. And John wondered about the process. Do you guys argue a lot, or what comes first, typically, Betsy?
Well, you know, I was so afraid when we wrote our first book, you know, when we had our idea. I took months before I would even sit down to talk to Michael. I was so afraid that we were going to have radically different ideas, you know, and I finally, in kind of almost anger, we were in a hotel room, said, you sit on this side and I'll sit on that side with each, and let's each, we'll outline the book and then we'll show each other what it is. And I was so sure it was going to be completely different. And we came together, and I think we had like 18 chapters, and out of those, 15 were not only the same chapters, but in the same order. It was like, I couldn't believe it. It was, our minds were so much alike. And that gave me, that event gave me trust that we were going to be able to do things together. So since then, we make an outline together. You know, we talk a lot about the book, about the first notions of the book over dinner or whatever. And then eventually we sit down and we write a full outline together. And with that outline, once we've got that, we feel confident in turning the book over scene by scene. Each one writes a scene, and then the other one revises it. And then once that's revised, tosses it back, and the other one writes another scene. And it moves forward through the outline that way. And then the outline changes, you know.
Yeah.
And you wound up deciding to do something a little different. But we haven't fought over plot or, you know. We fight over commas, but we don't fight over plot.
Steve emailed us. He went to grad school at UW in the 80s, and Betsy was his favorite teacher. He was a TA for her, took classes from her, and she was on her dissertation committee. She's never had a teacher with that kind of energy who created that much excitement in the classroom. And on that note, I have got to say thank you for being with us, and I hope we have a chance to do this again. Betsy Drain and Michael Hinden, their book, The Bones of Bascom Hall, The Bones of Bascom Hall, a Nora Barnes and Toby Sandler mystery. And thank you so much for listening in today. Our producers, Clara Neipert and Joel Patnod, thank you, as do our technical directors, Lee Rayburn and Jeff Robbins, and of course, our executive director, Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller, and stay with us. Lots in store here on WPR News.